you think of Herbert W. Armstrong, where he kept pointing out that if Jesus rose in the grave or the dead process for 3 days, rose after 3 days, he said, it's not 3 days from Friday to Sunday. He would make a big deal about that. Was he on the right point?
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry. Was Jesus crucified?
Yes.
What happened to him after he, how many days was he in the stone?
Well, the first question is, wait a minute, if you're going to go there,
yeah,
you got to calculate how long he hung on the cross.
Okay, well, what day did he die? That's in the during phase.
Well, he died on Maundy Thursday.
And was there a calendar at that time? And that's what the calendar would agree, that he died on a Thursday.
Well, no, that's what the council in that theater decided he died on.
What happened on Good Friday? He rose again.
No, he was buried.
Oh, he was buried on Friday. And then he rose on Sunday.
Well, the representation of Sunday, yes.
Was that 4 days then? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday?
Well, that would be Thursday to Sunday is 3 days.
Well, why is Herbert Armstrong talking about it being on Friday to Sunday? It's only 2 days.
Because his issue was not that. His issue was that Jesus told them that the temple would be destroyed and rebuilt in 3 days.
Okay.
And they got hung up on that, and the eschatology of that statement messed up his dogmatic of the climactic imagery that would be created from that position.
Talking about Herbert W. Armstrong, his view.
Yeah.
See, I don't know these particulars. I don't read the Bible, and I don't...
That's okay, but then you're talking about Armstrong, which was a mecca in that world, so...
Armstrong was? In the 20th century, he was a popular horse. But here's the thing. I'm just trying to remember what naive notions. Okay, Good Friday, we used to say, oh, he died on Friday. Why do they say it's a Good Friday? But we had it wrong. He died on Thursday.
He died, that's why they called it Maundy Thursday.
What's Monday?
Friday. Maundy Thursday. And see, here you go, start a tea tale.
Okay.
Just keep Maundy Thursday, make a little note, and Carolyn will look it up, and she'll explain it to you.
Yeah.
Lucy, you got some explaining.
The Wikipedia.
Go to the Wikipedia.
Okay, so bypass that. What's the point?
Exponentially speaking.
Okay, what were you going to say about... Okay, he died on Thursday. What did he do? He's buried on Friday, and therefore he's... Well, it depends on what time on Friday, but let's say 12 hours on Friday, 24 hours on Saturday.
They were Jews, so he had to be buried within 24 hours of his death. And they didn't bury on Friday, so I'm sure it was very late Thursday night.
Oh,
they were Jews. Jews don't bury on Friday.
Right. So he buried then, so he rose on Sunday. So he buried on Friday, Saturday, and then he rose on Sunday. That's not 3 days. That's the beginning of 3 days.
Well, it depends on what time Thursday they buried him.
Oh, okay. Well, the point is that Herbert Armstrong made a big deal that it wasn't 3 days. It sounds like you're saying, no, it was 3 days, Herbert.
It was 3 days because you have no calculation. And then the best example that you have that he rose was Mary Magdalene, who went to put spices even from stinking up the joint.
Yes.
And she met him on the path and didn't recognize him, but kind of did.
Okay, I want to stop that. That's okay. I remembered something. What did Moses do on the mountain to have this experience? Did he go into trance? Did he hallucinate something? Did he see a UFO? What technically actually happened in Moses' experience that made him felt that he was spoken to by I Am?
That's very great. Perfect words, and Carolyn's just going to love it because it's a simple, direct question that can be tied into a whole process. And this won't even be a detail.
Good.
Here's what happened. When they got across the Red Sea, the people, the children of Israel, with the spoils of Israel, they were there. And every step of the way, they were following Moses. He had done everything that God told him to do, that the people wanted. Let my people go. Went up again Pharaoh, and the fire destroyed Pharaoh's army. He'd already done everything that the people had asked him to do. And every step of the way, they got to the Red Sea, and the people said, Moses, there you have now. You can say, you can verify this from your Charlton Heston version of the Ten Commandments, but even so, it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Every step of the way, everybody was a grumbling and blowing. Well, great. Now you let us out of Egypt. We're in bondage, but at least we got to eat. And now you're going to get us killed right here, right now, because here comes Pharaoh's chariot. We can feel the breath of them horses on our backs. And here we are. We would have been better off staying in Israel. I mean, in Egypt.
Yeah.
All right, every step of the way, they were grumbling, 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 grumbling. And every step of the way, Moses said, God, here we are now. I don't know. Now we're in the Red Sea. Moses held up his staff because he didn't have any resistance. He was already pretty far down the rabbit hole. He was down to the only thing that ever works anyway, which is relaxing and allowing. He held his staff up, and Aaron had to help him hold his arms up because he was getting tired of holding his hands up to keep the Red Sea parted for him. All right? Now they got across the Red Sea. Now some would say that the Red Sea was only 4 inches deep at that point. And we're like, well, fabulous, but then after they get across and they're going through how much mud to get across, that was enough to drown the rest of the remaining part of Pharaoh's army.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting. Now, once they got across, then they thanked God that they had been spared. The Exodus had occurred.
How many days was that?
The Exodus?
Yeah, to that point you just described, from when they left Egypt.
Well, it would have been the span of the plague, so it would have been approximately a year and a third, or counting the dog years, it would have been just in a span of time, but you could best call a year and a third.
Right. You used the phrase dog years, which you brought up, as an ironic statement about our miscalculations based on the wrong calendar. That's what you mean by dog years.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Meaning that those numbers can skew.
Right.
So which part you start counting from.
Yeah.
You see. All right, now. Then they got to the place, they had all this gold, they had the spoils of Egypt, they were safe, they had been delivered, their deliverer had come and took on Pharaoh, who had his own gods and was a god himself, you see, and his god was stronger than their god. So there must have been other gods about, otherwise one of the Ten Commandments wouldn't be there. The top commandment should be, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Yeah.
All right, so now the people were there, and they said, we need a king. We need a king. We need a Pharaoh. We need somebody to give us the law, because we don't know the law. Now we're free. Wait a minute, what is that? The people realized for the very first time they were in absence of bondage. This is key note.
Right.
Over the top. For the first time, the people, the children of Israel, were in no bondage. And what is the very first thing that they did? They said that in the mountain, Mount Sinai, which is where they landed, which is where Moses came from, remember, that's where he got his wife.
Okay.
So he had been there before. He knew where to go. That's where the cloud would resonate, and that's where they believed that God spoke.
Yeah, but let's just go back a bit. You said they realized they weren't in bondage, and then what did the calf worship? They partied. I didn't get what they did.
Well, they asked for a king.
Who did they ask?
Moses.
Okay.
And Moses said, wait, you don't need a king. You don't king. You just got out from under a king. You just got out from under a pharaoh. You just got out of a pharaoh thing, and now you're asking for a new pharaoh. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They said, okay, Moses. We understand. So if we don't have a king, then give us the law.
Mm.
We need rules and regulations.
Couldn't he have said, no, you don't? Or
Moses said, no, you don't. You don't need a king. You don't need a pharaoh. They said, okay, if we're not going to have a king, then somebody to say what the word of God is or how God is in our experience or which way to go.
Wait a minute. They said we need the law. Why didn't Moses say we don't need laws?
Because that was their asking. That was their wanting.
Oh, he would go with that. They want a law.
Because otherwise they were going to pick a pharaoh, pick a king.
But
now remember the kings in Israel? They had trouble with that, you remember?
Trouble with what?
Kings. Manasseh was a king.
Yeah, because they started off with Moses saying no kings, just the law.
Correct. And so he went to the Mount Sinai.
He had to go. What did he personally think? The end of it. He said, "Well, I better go get some laws for them."
No, he was done with it. He was done with the whole process. He wasn't going to have it. He's like, "How could God deliver these people that are so damn stupid that they're asking to be put right back in the place?" He'd have been better off leading them right back into Egypt and let them make bricks without straw.
Yeah, but wait a minute. That's on the king point. They asked for the law.
All right, now that's where we are.
Yeah.
That's where the story goes.
He fed up because they want a king. Okay, we got that.
Okay, and he says, you don't need a king. And they said, okay, Moses, we understand. We're not happy here. We're all alone. We have no rules. We don't know which end is up. It's not good, and you brought us here. So this is your fault. This is your problem. So Moses said, okay, in the past, in my past experience, in what I have trusted and believed so far, in the word I've heard from God so far, and has resonated the non-physical part of me that made me this ruler that I didn't want to be,
yeah.
I will quietly retreat from this, and I will climb the mountain and have quiet time, resistance-less experience, that will allow the answer to come to me.
So the answer being to answer their law request.
Well, to figure out how to solve it, to figure out what to say to them, it'll figure out that they don't need the law, or if they've got to have the law, here we go.
Right.
All right. Now,
a conundrum.
Here we go.
He had a puzzle.
Correct. So, now, he climbs Mount Sinai.
How many miles of time does that take?
Well, he was gone for 40 days.
So it's a high, it's a long climb.
Well, I don't know. You're barefoot, and you just crossed the Red Sea, and you might be in a mess. So, you know, I don't know if he prayed a step, took a step and prayed a day. Who knows? How long that is.
Yeah.
It is. But Mount Sinai is close to the banks of the Red Sea. So it's in that same geographic location.
Okay.
All right, so he climbs the mountain, okay, and he stood on what he perceived as holy ground, and then he witnessed the burning of a bush that was not consumed by fire.
But you said he stood on holy ground?
Yes, what? He said he stood on holy ground.
What determined that?
Well, he said that the burning bush spoke to him.
Right, but he went to be quiet. Did he sit down a couple of days to be quiet before the burning bush spoke?
No. No, he was climbing, and on his way up, he was asking God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Okay, God, I've trusted you so far. The non-physical part of me has trusted the non-physical part of you, and you've got us out of Egypt. You've got us out of all this stuff. And now the people are saying they want a king. And then I said, no. They said, okay, then give us the law. Give us the law. Tell us what's right and not right. And we'll live by those. Those will be the rule. We don't have to have a king. Because otherwise, without the law, they felt they had to have a head. What do you call it? Not the witch doctor, but the high priest or the, what's the, when the tribes, what do you call the?
Shaman.
Well, no, those were more the witch doctors. The
priest warrior.
Well, the head of the tribe.
The chief.
They had to have a chief to tell them what was right. The judge matters of state and of court. So Moses goes up, and there's this bush that's on a fire that will not be consumed. Meaning it's burning, but it won't burn up.
From an outsider's perspective, was there a burning bush?
Yes, in his mind there was a burning bush.
In his mind, but if I was nearby and not subject to his mind, would there have been a burning bush?
You wouldn't have seen it.
Right. Okay.
See, because it wouldn't have been in your experience.
Right.
But he was searching, asking God what to do. He was quieting his mind, relaxing and allowing non-physical to affect his asking and his wanting. And for him, or at least what the Council of Nicaea said was okay, he saw what was, he perceived as a burning bush that was not consumed. And that burning bush told him that he was on holy ground, because how would he know he was on holy ground?
Mm-hmm.
And since he was on holy ground, take his shoes off. Take your shoes off, Moses. You're on holy ground. Well, he said, okay. So he talked to this burning bush. And this burning bush told him what was his asking. He says, I'm perplexed. They want a king. They just get out of bondage, and now they want to be back in bondage. Well, then they roll into a place of like, well, now wait a second. Okay, well, if we don't have a king, they wanted rules to live by. The burning bush responded, oh, well, you want laws. Okay, continue your ascension to Mount Sinai, and it will be delivered to you. Okay, so he goes up into the top where the fire is in the cloud, and he says, okay, I'm as high as I can get. I can't get no higher because I'm at the top. Now, what is your word, God, for your children, the chosen? And those, the finger of God, then carved and etched in stone the Ten Commandments as you know them now.
Now, at that point, an outside observer, somebody's wandering by, would he see, did Moses see the finger of God?
Yes.
Is this more in his mind and an outsider would not see it?
Probably. Don't know. You're asking how all this transpired. So,
yeah, well, that's a key point. How much is in his mind? He did apparently return with tablets, so, and something was etched in them. Maybe he did it.
Okay. Well, then, you know, first of all, he had to carve the stones out of the rock, and then, because the stones were attached to the rock.
Yeah.
Then he had to write or carve the commandments on the stone. You know, and he didn't have any tools, so I don't know how you do that otherwise. Well, it doesn't make a difference.
No, no. What do you see? Ion sees all. What do you see happen?
I can tell you what Moses saw. Moses saw the finger of God write the Ten Commandments on stone tablets.
Well, it's interesting you tell us what Moses saw, but you can't see whether another person would have seen how the tablets were made.
They wouldn't have seen.
So the tablets appear out of nowhere. From the outside.
The tablets are carved out of the solid stone.
And then no one would have seen it happen other than Moses. And it's all in Moses' mind. So ESP, he did psychokinesis on the stone.
Possibly if God was in him, which we now know he is, was.
Why do you say we now know?
Well, because they didn't. You're getting Moses' example of what happened.
Right, but we now
didn't have a clue what was going on, except that God had got him this far. God in him had rose him up out of nothing. He stuttered. He was not at the top of the food chain. And he relaxed loud enough that allowed the Holy Spirit, or the non-physical part of Moses, to be activated. But he let it in. He took over, did all of Pharaoh, all of Egyptology. Indeed, in one fell swoop, and even the Egyptians talk about it.
Yeah,
in their recorded history. So something was going on. Okay.
Say he was channeling?
Did
he do JW is doing.
No, it's a little different.
Okay.
He was meeting his asking and wanting. He was creating.
And yeah, and creating. And each person creates differently. This is how his creation manifested.
Manifest. Perfect word.
Yeah.
I don't love you so much for very good stuff, because otherwise it becomes a detail.
Yes.
All right. So now he gets the stones. Now, meanwhile, his hair's turned white.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't look. Their belief system would not allow you to witness or look at the face of God. You know why? Because the bliss that would come from that expression of pure positive energy would transcend you out of your physicalness and bring you with the non-physical.
And that would, by their perceptual law, make your hair go away.
It did, in his experience. Okay, now wait now. I got a little sidebar. Now don't run with this now. Just be easy with it, okay?
Yeah.
Don't take off with this.
Yeah.
I just want to take it. This is what is known, the same psychologist would call a psychosis, or the losing of your mind.
Gotcha. Let's leave it at that. We got that for the record.
But that's also a part, because people's hair can turn white immediately when that becomes loses pigment.
Yes, psychologists have noticed this.
They have. All right. So now he's got the top ten, and now he's had an experience with God. Okay, a notable experience. Now he's had a lot of God already. Okay.
Yeah.
But now it's like, okay, the people's wanting what they want rules to go by. God, the finger of God, wrote it in the stone tablet, and now I have it that they can see. Because if he just went back down and says, well, I can't even talk good, how am I going to tell the people what the rules are? And the finger of God wrote it on a tablet for them to witness. So he manifested in their reality as well, because it completed their wanting. They wanted rules. All right, he's been gone too long. Then they got Aaron to build the calf, Baal, that they was going to worship. They needed a god. And Moses didn't know if Moses was going to come back. And they had been delivered far and yon. They'd seen the mighty working power of an ever-loving God, but that wasn't enough. So they started intercoursing and melting the gold and made a calf for them to worship. Just snacks all over the place. Dogs and cats laying together, just wide open.
Why were they doing that? Because they had no law?
They had no God to worship. Moses was their only representation of Yahweh. They couldn't even say the name of God, let alone experience it.
But if they didn't have any God, why did they start having orgies and all that?
Because they built a God for them to worship, and the sacrifice of what they'd witnessed in Egypt was, if you're going to have a sacrifice, and you're going to worship, then that bring the party on.
Why did they make that conclusion?
Because that's all they had been exposed to in Egypt.
Oh, that would happen often in Egypt.
Well, of course.
I see. Party time. All right.
Party time, because they're like, well, hey, suit's on, let's go.
But did the Egyptians take any kind of herb or drug in their partying?
They had lots of elixirs and scents that they used. To basic, not quite opiate based, but more stretches, a strong drink, the same thing that would be a form of a beer, a honey. It's not a wine, but it'd be more like a fermented honey, which the Vikings would call that meat, but they had strong drink.
Right, they would loosen up. Wine. They would take stuff to loosen up their. That's
right. It was the fastest pass of their joy, and anything else that came along that they could try that zoned them out a little more, that was fun too.
Yeah.
So it was like not to step out.
Yeah.
All right. So now they got to that. Now Moses coming down later, much later, and he had been gone too long.
Yeah.
The people had went right off the deep end. Okay. And he comes down and he hollers at Aaron, who had built. Now Aaron is God's, one of God's chosen. And he's the one who actually formed the image of Baal, the cow that they was worshiping.
Yeah.
Moses come down, and he was mad. He was as He was as hot as a firecracker. He was not happy. Here they had pushed and prodded and poked and caused all this creation to take place, and they had divested themselves right back of their experience of what they call Yahweh or God. And here he had spent all this intention on getting it cleared up once and forever so they could be happy ever after by having an unhappy journey. And he looked and he seen what they had created and what they had been doing, and he was mad as a firecat, and he took those stones and he said, "You don't deserve the word of God." And he took them stone tablets and he threw them down on the ground, and they busted wide open. It busted. And the lightning struck and the winds whirled and everything had been exposed, and they seen Moses and had some kind of encounter, because obviously he was changed. He was not the way he was when he went up on the mountain. Something inside of him was activated that changed the perception is what they knew as Moses.
So they knew something had happened. They could see it.
They broke them stones. He broke them stones. And all of Mount Sinai was consumed. And he said,
what do you mean by that sentence? All of Mount Sinai was consumed. What do you mean?
It was consumed with fire. It was consumed with lightning and the
water. Oh, that was happening when he did it?
When he broke them stones, let me tell you what, the heavens turned loose.
And the people saw that. That was not in Moses' mind.
You better believe it. They experienced it. And he said, Now, you wanted the law, here it is. Choose you now whom you shall serve. Choose. And they said, them that's with me, come up here on this part of the rock. Them that ain't, you stay right where you are. And Naaman and Laman and four or five others that was brought out of that same house of Pharaoh that was thrown out with them, said, no, we've got Baal, we can worship him. And Moses says, choose. And a handful of them chose to go up there and stand. They said, Moses, as far as me and my house, I'm going with Moses. He's got us this far down the rabbit hole, and I'm going with him. Well, the rest of them that was down there that was confused and wasn't going to have it and was and cut off their experience or their source,
yeah.
True source of energy, the non-physical part, that was going to stay with the gold, with the golden calf, and wasn't going to have it because Moses, they weren't going to have Moses be the king because that wasn't the point. The point was that they was going to have it their way, which is fine, but they were negating the non-physical part of them.
Yeah.
That cutoff or separation didn't cause that lightning or fire or something hot enough to melt gold, and they were made to drink the liquid gold, and they were consumed and destroyed.
Who made them do that?
The fire from the mountain melted the gold and made them drink it.
Wow, the one had been cut off. They got, quote, punished. Unquote.
Well, no, they activated the hell that they was going to experience.
Okay.
They activated it.
So the rest of the people saw that.
And they thought, what a mighty God we serve, we better hang with Moses in the crowd. And they were consumed because of their disconnect from source that they had asked for.
Yeah.
If they hadn't asked for it, it wouldn't have been an issue. They set that order. They set the judgment. They set their judgment. Because they wouldn't allow anything else.
Right.
So that was their manifested experience.
And now, would a psychologist say there was some mass psychosis going on here?
I don't know. Drinking liquid gold, you'd have to be freaking crazy, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But call it what you will.
How many of them did that?
It was a good number. But you know about a vast crew of people that came out, all the slaves in Egypt.
How many? Is there 10,000 people? Like, who's
probably more like 100,000.
Oh, okay. Is that
otherwise, unless the Atlanteans with their little gravity sticks, it'd take 100,000 of them just to raise them obelisk. If they didn't have those Atlantean gravity sticks, they could move them 100-ton boulders 400 feet in the air. Go cipher that one out in your pressure in what you understand as gravity.
Yeah.
All right, so fine. So now we come to a place where they're consumed by their disconnection from source that they asked for. That's then when they collected the tablets, and they put them in the box. It was not golden, but they put them in the box with the bones of Joseph.
And who was Joseph?
Joseph was, you remember the coat of many colors story?
Yeah.
Joseph was the one that was chosen by his father to go get the grain deal worked out because they're starving.
Yeah.
And the brothers was jealous and they killed him, but instead of killing him, it didn't. He became in the house of Pharaoh and was high in the pecking order of the whole process, pre-Moses.
Did you say pre-Moses?
Pre-Moses. See, that was before Moses was around, born.
Ah, okay, so the Jews had, are the Israelites or Jews? Who are these people? What are they called?
Jewish people are, they are Israelites.
Okay, so they had preserved the bones of Joseph.
Joseph died in bondage. He was high, but he died in bondage. And he was in Egypt when he died. And they even allowed them to create a monument or a place for his bones to be buried.
Gotcha.
Because he had actually organized the slave trade for Pharaoh. That's how far up he went.
Were his Midian.
He was a Midian.
What?
Midian.
M-E-D-E-A-N for mead?
No, Midian is the geographical place it still is.
Okay.
He was a Midianite.
All right, but back, is it in the Bible that the Ark of the Covenant, is it written in the Bible we have today that the Ark of the Covenant contained the tablets and the bones of Joseph? I don't think so.
I hope so, it is.
Oh, is that what is it written in the Bible?
Oh, no, that's a JW question. That's not an Iron question. We just tell you what was in it.
Right. You can't tell us what the Bible says.
Well, there's references that are coming from UC, but you have no exposure to that. So from the asker, you can't get there from here.
Right. My ignorance blocks your getting the answer.
Of the archetypal grid that the answer would come from. But here's what was in the box. It wasn't the Ark of the Covenant. It was just a box.
Ah, okay.
That was on a cart with Moses' sister.
A cart with, what do you mean, with Moses' sister? What's that mean, with?
He was riding in that cart.
Oh, she was beside the box.
Well, yeah, to the side. And what happened was, in those special things, that they had great affinity regarding. They were special things that reminded them from whence they came. Because remember, they were a people who were not. There wasn't an Israeli council then. There wasn't an Israel then. They were a people that were not.
Yeah, and they had this, the broken tablets and the bones is a marker.
They brought the bones
before, but adding the tablets was a marker of when they made the decision to be with Moses or not. That's the beginning.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And they imbued these priceless things of remembrance with great power.
Great psychic, a belief, a thought for a long time. A belief is a thought sunk for a long time.
And they imbued it with power.
Yeah, did they say, if I put my brother near it, he will be healed of this problem?
No, it wasn't quite like that, but the same. But now also you got to remember, Moses was running around with a stick that he could smoke the rock and water would come out of, that he could hold up and part the Red Sea, that he could lay down and cause to turn into a snake and gobble up Pharaoh's sticks that would turn into serpents.
And those happened not just in Moses' mind, but from others' perceptions.
Well, Egyptian history records it that way.
Yeah. Okay.
And the magic that was of that day, you see, they spoke in their time, in the Egyptian time. They speak of the waters turning to blood.
Yeah.
They speak of those different plagues as their manifested reality. And the whole gist of that point was, is that Moses' God was more powerful than their God.
Okay.
God. So there's a lot of things that go. All right. Now.
They're putting power into the card, and this connects to what we discussed about the Ark of the Covenant, you know, a week or two ago.
Well, it comes into the part, it's what makes the natural supernatural.
Right. Here's the thing. And can we say the non-physical of the people started energizing the box?
Yes.
Yeah. They put, it's the spiritual, the non-physical part of people, if they want to put significance into something, the non-physical of the people can do that. It will start to acquire supernatural antimatter, thought power, or something.
A la Wall Street.
Yes, Wall Street had that.
Okay. Yeah. And that
a la the Solomon's Temple?
Yes, but now wait, we're not talking.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you got a box. You got the bones of Joseph. You got the broke up Ten Commandments. You have some other little tidbits in there as well. Another tidbit that made it in that was the rod of Aaron.
Okay.
And that was significant because that was given to him by Moses when he didn't cross the River Jordan.
Right, and this is something put in the box that same moment or later?
Later, much later, and you don't even know a time frame because that started the 40-year journey.
That was the beginning, okay, because that is a year and a half after leaving Egypt. Right, so now they start. Now, I don't know, crossing the River Jordan is later?
Not quite, 40 years later.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, now they're carrying it all around following the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. Manna falling every day, eat all you want, coming out of the sand, or falling from heaven. Manna from heaven, that's where it comes from. That was the first time manna had ever been recorded. Some call it locust and wild honey, but that's like a banana.
Right.
Go figure. You can work it out anyway.
But from Thorsa's perception, this did happen.
That's the first time it happened.
Right, and the people were like,
the physical and the non-physical was so closely intertwined that magical, unorthodox, unnormal
tactility
could be tactility received only because of Moses' obedience to relax and allow and just trust God.
He was 3-2-1-ing it?
All the way.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Now, and he wasn't the worthy one, but see, Moses didn't see himself as worthy. He said, God, if you think I'm worthy, then I'll do what you ask.
It's much
that
like
was
me.
Moses, that was Moses's activating the non-physical part. That was Moses that set that whole chain into place.
Much like me. Someone might look at my life from some sense and what a homeless bum it was. But I had the capacity to relax and allow.
You are the true part son of Moses. You are the true part son of God.
So when my cup and glass was made to have this life come forth in this 20th century, I had a part of Moses in my cup.
So then, therefore, Bob, this day, let the Exodus begin.
April 16th, 2009, and let's get the exact time on this declaration that I don't care about, but will allow.
Carolyn's going to enjoy it.
I'm enjoying it.
1908.
Welcome back, sugar.
1908, well, right now it's 42, but, you know, 8 minutes after 7 p.m., April 16th. to 9 minutes after 7 evening. Anyway, that's great. Carry on.
Carolyn, we've almost got into the land that's fairer than day. And
yeah.
By faith, we can see it afar.
And it'll take 3 more days, and we'll be living in Grand Wailea.
There we go.
3 days.
The rain parts that over us depart.
So when people hear this tape, they suddenly hear the pagan Carol say, we'll be in Grand Wailea.
Yeah, it's a far journey. It's down the street. You walk there. It's great.
This is great. This is the way people laugh.
All right. Now, well, if they listen, they might get it. They might understand how the whole Exodus took place. And the Exodus has lots of meanings. And, Carolyn, when you play with that, look up the Exodus and look at the different dimensions or the tactile resonances that the word Exodus has.
Uh-huh.
It'll be kind of very interesting. Because then you start that journey and that process. Okay.
But wait, you were starting the journey, but we did 40 years. Isn't it like we've arrived?
Well, you have, but that's not the end of the story.
Okay, good. I just wanted to say, Carolyn, this is a great story that he's been telling. You know.
No tea tail, darling.
It's not a tea tail.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, it might be a little more interesting being noteless, though, however, but...
Noteless?
With it. Noteless. She always takes notes as she's going along.
Right. It might be more interesting because it's noteless.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway. All right, so now this box that's being imbued with intention.
Right.
The box. It was not the Ark of the Covenant. The box was imbued with intention. And we know that's what moves heaven and earth, remember?
That's right.
Yep. Okay.
That's the tactile interplay with source and 3-2-1-ing it.
Why the tsunami hits here and doesn't hit there.
Right. And it's also on the mass mind level. The tribal mind is energizing this somehow too, right?
Absolutely. And you can draw lots of inferences, but now don't jump off on different rabbit holes now, because we've got to take this together or she'll never get through. She'll put it in the rewrite column and it'll be bad. Stay together, girl. All right. Now, once that imbued power got collected in this box, then it grew with the belief system that these elements were important because it reminded the people that were not where from whence they came.
Is this the creation of antimatter?
No, you can't get that. You put it in here, she'll say that the story doesn't work. So
okay, but
the answer is yes, but just say that's another chapter.
But we did define it 45 minutes ago as thought, creating thought.
Them goobers was giants, and they'd whoop you fast.
How tall was a giant in those days, in our terms?
Approximately 9.5 feet tall.
And they were, how many were there of those?
Thousands.
So they were tall. That's a fact.
That's a fact.
And
they found their bones, and the archaeologists, well, actually, that's not true. The archaeologists have come close to finding femurs and the heavy, dense bones that could withstand that much time, and they verified that they would have to be giants, because you see, most of the Israelites were about 4'2".
Wow.
That was tall.
Yeah. 4'2" was tall.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying the scientists have found the bones, or they haven't found them?
They found some of the femurs, because see, you have to have a really dense, heavy bone to withstand that much time, unless you're in Pompeii, where everything was buried in dust. You were sealed immediately. This wasn't like that. But the point was, the heavy bones, if they connect those up or extrapolate how big the femur was compared to that, it was about twice as tall as the tallest Israelite.
And when were these found? These bones were found recently, femur?
It was within about 65 years ago, and they're still working on it.
Are they publicly announced?
Well, you'll have to check your recorded history.
Okay, all right. Anyway, so that happened. All right.
Anyway, it was the point of the story was it was verifiable, archaeological documented effects that substantiate that the Canaanites were indeed of a greater, taller stature than the Israelites.
Right.
Enough that it would activate in them fear.
Yeah.
Except this was a promise. Carolyn, when you look up the definition of a promise, we don't need it because we know it, but verify your definition of a promise. It was a promise from God. God's chosen people activated a God-chosen promise in their existence or their reality. And it was made manifest not because of anything other than Moses's, who wasn't there at that time because he didn't cross the River Jordan, remember?
Yeah.
But their remembrance of the God force in Moses allowed them to relax and allow and take that, their knowing, their belief, their thought they've been thinking for a very long time, because they remembered because of this box that was imbued with this power, energy, resonance that reminded them of their becoming.
Right. Now, did they have formal meetings to discuss this when you talk about reminding? Are they gathering around and looking at the box or thinking of it and doing this? Not just sort of wandering around.
They weren't of the same mind. So therefore, they had to be divided. This is perfect. To not ever go through this, you're pretty sharp knife in the drawer here, Bob.
Thank you.
They had to divide because they weren't of the same houses. And a house divided will surely fall. Remember that rule?
Yeah.
So therefore, they had to divide. And they were divided into, not 12, into 13 tribes.
Yes.
And those were the tribes of Israel. And those tribes had certain responsibilities. The Levites, the Levitical order, they were in charge of ushering in. They would dance and delight themselves before the Lord. And they would be the ones dancing to Shania Twain, I'm sure.
Yes, that's me. Or the
imagine that.
you got that, Carolyn?
They would dance their clothes off, basically, and delight themselves before the Lord. But now remember, they've got this box that's imbued with this power. And in their dancing, they would usher in the new covenant.
Right. And they did this more than once?
Every day. That
right.
was her job. And you didn't miss the best. You missed the best part now.
Yeah, but before we go there, these divisions happened from day. They evolved over the 40 years, right?
The beginnings of it was done, but until they reached Canaan was when it was actually prescribed as you are in this house or this order or this
range. Okay, let's go back to the part I almost missed.
Okay. The part you almost missed is we were talking about the new covenant.
Yeah.
Then was the first covenant.
Well, that was the I Am on Mount Sinai, I assume.
Was that a covenant? That thing got broken by the time Moses and himself got back down off the mountain.
The covenant when they all agreed to go to Canaan?
They didn't agree. They didn't agree. They all had to stay in the desert for 40 years until the ones that didn't agree died.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, as we go
described
back.
Described as a Noah, that's the point.
Abraham.
Abraham had a covenant, but that covenant was not in that lineage or that line. See, this was post-flood.
Oh, yeah,
Abraham. Covenant, the original covenant. They called this a new covenant, but not because there was an old one that this one was replacing. It was a new covenant because for the first time they actually resonated and understood that they indeed had imbued the power in the Ark of the Covenant and that they had activated the resonance inside them that allowed them to have a seamless, co-creative ability and capacity that they could allow through their law, which is a little bit, that's a problem, but it was the only one they had, so it was good enough, you see.
Yeah.
They came into the place very quickly to where they realized that their ability as God's chosen, they lived a long time, so therefore they had to live a long time. They didn't have cancer in their body, in their family, so they didn't have cancer. It's a thought process that allowed them to prescribe to a level or degree of what you call greatness.
Yeah, they became aware of the process that was unconscious for 40 years, and they were getting the manna.
And yet they still had to have the law. They didn't have the law then, but they had to have the law to decide for themselves what was right and what was wrong.
Right, but
to figure that out themselves.
Did you say they couldn't?
Could not.
But the Levites realized this, or everybody realized this?
No, the different tribes had different jobs. The Levites' job was to light themselves before the Lord.
And you're saying the Levites realized the manifestation law of
the tribes. All the tribes did. I was just telling you what the Levites' job was.
But they did this once they squatted.
Yes.
They realized this once they squatted.
Correct. It dawned on them that they had been witnessing the miracle working power of God all along.
Right.
And that resonated the power that the hand, the mighty hand of Yahweh, that they can't even say, came into their experience. All the way back to the Passover, back in Egypt, all the way back into the how they got in bondage the first time, all the way through the desert, all the way through the whole process.
Back to the first covenant? What is the first covenant? Something before or this?
There was no first covenant.
Okay.
They called it the new covenant, but it was the only covenant. Because every other of that was almost nomadic. They would build tents to house the bones or the different parts.
And we talk about the hand of God. That's the hand is a symbol of tactility in Mahonism. So it's just tactility is in the hand of God.
Yes, it is, but if you turn this into a detail, I'm not going to
Okay, you just started to say the parts in the box we were talking about.
Okay, the parts in the box that have been imbued by them.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Who is them? Well, let's get the pronouns right. Who is them?
The whole tribes. Everybody imbued the box with that.
No. The power was already imbued, and they resonated with that. Who imbued the box with power?
Moses or whoever
knows.
They're non-physical?
The dead ones. The ones that croaked before for a couple thousand years before. Those dead ones was the resonance. And they would speak of the generations and why they towed around Joseph's bones. You see, it was the non idealized creations of those that had knew the promise and lived the promise but didn't live long enough to experience the manifestation.
That's
and
Joseph.
All of that sea of gulf was imbued with power in the Ark of the Covenant.
But Joseph was, it's not just Joseph.
It's not just Joseph, but he was the resonance that of whose bones they toted out of Egypt. But it's not about that, it's about the thousands and thousands and thousands of generations and thousands and thousands and thousands of people that croaked, that didn't have, that had unrealized manifestations that went into the gut, that got imbued by the people into this box that they hadn't even layered with gold yet.
You're saying today that the thinning of the veil, we can tap into the escrow without losing the physical.
Oh, my God.
There's your E equals MC squared, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they layered the box with gold.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they started recognizing that if the ark, and that could only be carried by the Levites, the tribe of Levi,
the great dancers,
they were the only ones that were aligned or trusted or were, had no resistance regarding this magically imbued box with all of the unrealized creation from those that had gone on before, that magical box. Now started picking up what you call a hell of a lot of static electricity.
Right, and you're saying they realized it was from the Gulf and all that, that we now are saying today and realize it?
But for our forefathers, we could not be here. But for our lineage that was provided, we could not come to this day. The promised land was promised to 2,000 years before they got there. And they thought on it, and they remembered the ones that made the way for them to arrive at the land of milk and honey. That creation came from those that went before, that croaked before. And those are the exact words. Except for those that went before, we could not have achieved this reality that they spoke of then, like we are experiencing now.
Right. Now, they did not have a JW in trance teaching them in their particular circumstance.
Well, they had it. They had it. They had it. They had God dropping bread every day in the desert, and they didn't believe that. They had Moses smoking the rock with his rod and water coming out of it because they're starving, and that was a problem, and Moses got in a little trouble over that. But they had the spoils of Egypt. That was God as they ever knew it. And they had every experience all the way through, and they didn't believe it.
Right. And
they couldn't see the forest for them damn trees. And they experienced the mighty working power of God in them, in their life, in their experience all the way through this. And just now, they come into the place and go, except for those that went before, we wouldn't have realized this creation that they spoke of.
Right, and you're saying today that the kind of miracle that's symbolized by the man and all that stuff in our history is happening with Ion, because Ion's situation will trigger so many souls having direct access to Source in a new way, in a more potent way. You're saying this is of that equal significance.
Or more.
There, in other words, this is the beginning of the 40-year Exodus.
Ended it.
Okay, good. Because he just assigned it. He did say it was the beginning 20 minutes ago, but
of the Exodus.
The beginning of the Exodus. Yeah. The mapping of crown, the spreading of the effect of Ion veiling that's shown in the Captain Cook map. That kind of nice metaphor of the map. We're looking at what the Exodus will do, Carol. Spreading the Grand Malaya message, the Club Dead message. By example,
then you'll have a new song, and your new song will be, I have left the land of bondage for a land of promise. And then you can hopefully sing that you're now camping in Canaan's land.
Right. The point is, Kim, you can't set up this as a 1-2-3 Exodus. It's a 3-2-1, which is what Moses and them, they experiencing the 3-2-1 with the manna allowing it every day. They didn't understand.
They didn't see it.
Because they were 1, 2, 3.
Well, they thought that the destination was the where they had to get.
Yeah, the 1, 2, 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were 1, 2, 3 in an environment of 3, 2, 1.
Correct.
Wow.
And that's what we're doing. We've arrived, but we can put on the 1, 2, 3 as a theater performance and the unfolding of this new Grand Club Dead. But we know our...
That is sailing down the super highway to hell.
By email, by the information highway of hell. And
we prefer G3 access.
Oh, okay.
It's better than that.
Right. But the thing is that we are putting on the performance 1, 2, 3, spreading Club Dead, even though we know we've arrived in our 3, 2, 1-ing every day on the journey. We are doing the Moses journey consciously.
Right.
You get that, Carol?
Except this time you know what you're doing.
Yes, this time.
Yeah, get it. I'm there, Bob.
So we're putting on, they some say the Passover plot that Jesus, and then put on the scene of the crucifixion. Crucifixion is a kind of a theater. That's one, a book. But, I don't know if that's true or not, but the thing is, we're doing
this. What difference does it make?
Right. We are doing this as a theater performance. It's a great musical composition.
And if it's a trick, it's a hell of a trick, because they're talking about it 2,000 plus years later.
When's that, Carol? What do you mean?
In the future, in 2,000 years,
yes.
They'll be talking about what we did.
What we did. And we come to this, that's why we're going to gather all the artifacts the royalty has in England and the Vatican has at this new wonderful Disney theme park.
We're not going to acquire it decorating.
Give it. Yes.
Give
very
it.
Good. Good point. But awareness said that the British Empire 300-400 years ago started to gather artifacts from all over the world. And that was an interesting fact. That stuck with me. We are going to gather the artifacts of the past in response to Club Dead's success.
Why do they call them the crown jewels?
Well, because they are.
No, but what is they?
The jewels are they the jewels in the crown?
Well, there's lots of crowns.
Oh,
are they important?
Because of the jewels in them.
No, they were rocks.
You say there are lots of crowns in the different monarchies in Europe? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm talking about the specific referenced. You can look at pictures of them on your internet of what is known as the crown jewel. That's a collection that's held in the Tower of London.
Some facts we don't even know, Carol. It's great. Some obvious tourist facts. But we were too busy the last 4 years to notice these things.
Okay.
But
they are.
They okay. Now you asked
and why. And the question is, why are they important?
No, why are they called the crown jewels? The first one.
And why are they important enough to be part of that collection? There are diamonds bigger than that.
Because they have the infusion of the magic.
They are made important because of the different coronations of their king, of their queen, of their lineage.
That are all
they
touched.
Are magically imbued with power because
yeah.
Their people see them as a step or a line in the sand of their becomingness.
Right. So
you'll have to figure out how to spell that because we obviously do not know.
but that's what I implied. They got the aura on them. They got the magic.
Well, it's easier. Aura is not the right word, but yeah, they were imbued. They were considered important by most or many to the point that they became important by most or many.
Yes, because they've touched all the heads of the England, all the kings.
Those heads, even those two little seed pearls from King John, which you just refused to play with all night.
Yeah,
well, that you pay. We're patient.
Well, yes. John lost most of them. John of
Imagine.
England near the wash in 1216, lost most of the crown jewels.
Oh, they go back before King John?
Well, how did he get them? He didn't collect them. He lost them.
Right. Well, who's the first king of England, I'm assuming? Are they from Moses?
No. What did they say?
What's it say? Where do they start, Carolyn?
Most of the oldest set dating from the Anglo-Saxon period were lost by John of England near the Wash in 1216.
Right.
Now,
so
who was John? Who was John?
John of England?
King John created the Magna Carta.
Yes, but who was John, King John?
Not up on that.
His son was King Henry VIII.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
So you can't go, King Henry VIII is like 1400s. How does the 1268 guy?
He was the eighth.
Henry VIII lived in the 1400s. King John, the Magna Carta, 1200, that's 150 years, you know, before.
King Henry VIII died in 1547.
Yeah, and he was born in the 1400s.
Henry inherited a vast fortune from his father, Henry VII.
Right. So
there were eight of them. He was the eighth Henry, but the lineage came from John.
Okay.
Oh, so Henry the First comes from John, not Henry the Eighth. I mean, the first.
No, wait. Okay.
Okay, King John's son. What's his name, Carolyn? Is it Henry the First?
About King John and Henry the Eighth. I'm looking it up.
What's the name of King John's son? That's how it begins.
Haven't got there yet.
It doesn't record it. You see that Henry VIII is the next Tudor king that comes into power.
Oh, King John is a Tudor?
Oh, that's when the House of Tudor was established.
With King John.
Correct.
Right.
He lost all the jewels, so he lost all of his power.
And took a few hundred years to get it back, I see.
Magical, isn't it?
Okay, we get John of England's 1167 to 1216. So he lost them. What did I say? 1214. So he didn't last long after he lost them.
Exactly. He lost his power, the magically imbued power that was the monarchy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the Plantagenets come in. I remember. I think the Plantagenets are in that period before the Tudor.
Okay. Yeah, fine. But the point was.
We're talking about we got sidetracked in the crown jewels.
All right, the crown jewels were important, and I'll finish that. They imbued them with significance. They believed them to be a historical marker of their lineage.
Yeah.
So their forefathers on an empire that the sun never sat upon.
Mm-hmm.
Was the manifestation of these bubbles that were not so significant except for they sat on their monarch's head or their kingdom.
Yeah.
Isn't that a part of thy kingdom come?
Mm-hmm.
Because if all the crown jewels were gone, would the British Empire still exist?
No.
Really?
Okay. I don't ever know. It could go take several threads of thinking, but I say no. So you say, okay, it would still exist. All right.
I'm just asking. I didn't have an opinion. I just asked the point.
But I don't know if it would still exist. It sounds like it wouldn't exist because so much is put into the crown jewels.
Then let's go back to John. John lost the crown jewels, lost the monarchy, lost everything, died, and then you have seven Henrys that don't get bit about their reign,
yeah.
And then Henry VIII comes in as the Tudor king,
yeah.
And that's where it all begins. So what happened to Henry I or Henry VII, and why can't Carolyn just give us voluminous recorded history regarding their expansive reign over the monarchy?
Well, you do have Henry V, the victorious guy who stops the War of the Roses or something. There's lots of Shakespeare plays about the Henrys.
Well,
some
indeed,
of the Henrys.
Indeed, and it took Shakespeare, the fatalist, to figure that all out. Wasn't that amazing?
What did he figure out?
That They had all this fatalism. It was all fatal.
Oh, okay, like the Kennedys.
Pretty much. So something changed. Well, the point of that is without the thing that they viewed as important, when that was dismissed or went away or or diminished, so did their importance.
Right, and you did mention the Tudors in passing last night, which I've been thinking about over the last 24 hours. Well,
I understand that's what caused the John question, because we wanted to deal with it as part of, if you're going to host this exodus, then history has no value whatsoever except for the transition of people imbuing power to inanimate things that they can use to come to their place of knowing of their own creationism.
Right, and this relates to the gathering, the giving of gifts to the Grand Wellhead at Disney Park.
At least Disney out of it.
Yeah, the Ion theme park. People will want their artifacts to touch what they will want to add their powerful artifacts to the power that's accruing that will be talked about in 2,000 years.
That they want to be a part of.
Right.
And that it's important enough for them to give as a gift. That's important enough for them to have resonance with the non-physical part of them because of the countless number who have gone on before and those unrealized manifestations. We've already established this pretty clear. Where do they go? They're showing back up now from a point of remembrance that this is how they came to those important things to start with, which is why the Ark of the Covenant supposedly has been lost. The spear that pierced Jesus' side is lost. It's evaporated. It kind of disappeared. Why the emerald tablet? You get the plural of that?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
the emerald tablet sort of disappeared. Mm-hmm. The same point that your Rhonda Burns tried to establish or resonate with those who've gone on before of these magical secrets that were hidden away, that the Knights Templar ran with and made a fortune with, that they set up the Federal Reserve System to capitalize on it, that all the world could come at this place, this little bitty country of nothingness, but could become the dragon, as the temple says, as the mountain says it, that in a couple of hundred years they become a superpower. A superpower.
Who, which country is that?
U.S.
Okay, got it.
Well, they got it all in a matter of a little bit.
Yeah, I know, I got it.
People in Europe have furniture older than our country is.
Is the Federal Reserve built on the Knights Templar's wealth? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
It was not. It was developed. They were part of the Knights Templar, the ones who invented. Oh, wait, created that system.
Known as the Federal Reserve?
Developing an echo.
but you're talking about the Federal Reserve?
Yes.
but listen, I don't know, maybe it's relevant, but
Karen's going to turn that tape recorder off if you don't stop, because
we're
getting it from you.
Because what was the last line?
They're getting it from you, this jokey bit.
Oh, okay, that's all right, but we're talking, the theme here, okay, so you finished what you were saying there about the Federal Reserve and why. Why were you saying?
How?
Oh, yeah, quit.
Okay.
The question. Yeah, I didn't say quit. I said how? What the heck were we talking about a minute and a half ago?
We were talking about people in physical, resonating with those who've gone on before.
Yeah.
Meaning dropped their physicalness and went to non-physical.
Right.
All those the escrow, unrealized creation that went to non-physical, their remembrance of those activates the question, where did this come from?
And the question, where did the Ark of the Covenant, I remembered, where, why are they disappeared? Because the something lost power. They lost use of that. Is Israel lost? You know,
No. They gave great importance to the gold-layered box, which was the mercy seat, which was the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Okay? John lost the crown jewels. Okay? And so they disappeared. So where are they? Why couldn't Henry VIII get them back?
They eventually got them because they're in the Tower of London now.
They were replaced. They couldn't find them.
Oh, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So the missing Ark of the Covenant, missing Emerald Tablets, missing...
Whoa.
You're gone, Bob.
Yeah,
so
I just want to battery. But these missing things are leading to a point.
Move closer, baby. You're not quite there.
Yeah.
These missing things, you said.
These missing things. Are you saying I'm not quite there with the thought here?
With your words, with your distance, your voice.
Distance.
You can't even echo from there.
Okay, talk.
There's something about these missing things, Carolyn.
Sorry, guys, do a little censorship. Okay, let's move it forward a minute. Censoring about a minute. Most valuable information ever. You guys won't hear any of it. And Carolyn laughs. Did you hear her laughing? Evil Carolyn. And you're on mute and I can't hear your responses. Okay, let's see. Another 10 seconds and then we'll open it up again. You'll be able to hear it. More wisdom. Right there. Okay, put the volume up. Do this very carefully. 3420.
My statement.
Why would an artifact that was important enough to establish the monarchy, if the jewels that John, King John of England, forfeited, lost, came not in his empire, were to be like other artifacts now discovered?
Yes.
The question. What would that look like?
That would look like escrow, incomplete, unrealized things showing up again from the escrow.
And what would the significance of that be?
That the ones that are in the tower right now aren't real.
Well, they are real because it's a thought you've been thinking a long time.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't. You could do a carbon test on it. Well, I don't know how you do carbon tests on rocks. You can do a carbon test on them and figure out that they were cut. The provenance on those articles are pretty well established. But why do they never make reference to King John's war chest?
Yeah, right.
And if those could be realized and the power that was imbued upon them, which almost cost the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention those damn Anglo-Saxons and the Welsh and every other province. You know, Devonshire was the thing. I'm going to take them over a couple of times themselves. That those un- things could be made manifest in your physicalness, it would remind the physical of those resonances and the non-physical that made them important the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Wedding rings are important to some people. Are they not?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It's a symbol of the union between people.
It's a physical
representation of non-physical.
Representation of, don't be screwing with my wife because she's taken.
Right, but the non-physical enters into the object.
No, it's a property thing.
And how is that? So, if you're going to go back, then we got to make a little line. We're going to go back to where we were. And the point of the significance of things is if they're important, they're important for a reason. And if the reason is that you recognize that except for those who've gone on before us, who made this reality a line in the sand, it reminds us that the non-physical part of all those that have gone on before is now the encapsulated resonance of a physical manifestation which allows a complete fluid flowing of the non-physical of all that has gone on before into the physicalness that is now, which will usher into the kingdom of earth, the kingdom of heaven, and they will become one. And it will be on earth as it is in heaven. And in heaven as it is on earth. That's what this whole tale was about.
Thy kingdom come. And there's another aphorism you were saying. Nothing is lost. These things.
Nothing is lost.
But that's in the non-physical. In the physical, seems some key elements were not lost. And they will be brought to the temple to as part of the acknowledgement of all the escrow for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. And the reminder of all those who've gone on before.
Mm-hmm.
Who we now can talk to through mediumship or ion. Remember, zillions lined up to speak to Bob and Carolyn. They're all gathering.
I have to stop it there. 348.24. Move it forward a few seconds.
Whoa.
Now, you're good. You're getting us there. You're getting us there. But now I've got a question. When the Exodus began, when they left Egypt, what did they just leave with their families quietly in the night?
They were chased.
Well, no, not in the beginning. They weren't chased.
But we're talking about there's the Exodus. The 40-year things happened after a year and a half.
No. Now wait. The Exodus happened when Pharaoh said, Moses, take your people and go. And when they left Egypt, did they just leave quietly with their families, or what did they leave with them when they left?
With the spoils.
The spoils of Egypt.
Right.
And what the heck were those?
Gold.
Wow, how did they get that?
All the riches of Egypt.
Wow. They carried that through for 40 years?
They towed it around and towed it around and towed it around. They did.
Why were they allowed to take the gold?
So Pharaoh had given up the plague that destroyed Egypt.
Okay.
This is not Christian lore or Jewish lore. This is hieroglyphically marked in Egyptian history.
Mm-hmm.
So once they found the land in Canaan, which Garrett Dean said was Canaan, but Garrett used to talk about Canada. The new Canaan was Canada. He was a poet. Anyway, then he was talking to us, and he was right. What?
He was a poet, but he didn't know it.
Yes, he was a poet, didn't know it, and he was talking to us. What's the problem here?
Could be better.
Okay, so get sidetracked on Garrett, but what were we just saying?
I have no idea.
The spoils.
I'm going to make it a key tale.
Yeah, no, the spoils. The spoils. They had the gold. Oh, Pharaoh collapsed. He gave his Moses' God won. So they didn't have a place to use the gold till they got to Canaan.
Oh no, they used it when they crossed the Red Sea. A lot of it they boiled down and made bales.
Oh yeah,
they were going to use it, but not all of it.
That's right. They wasted a lot. So they had a little bit when they arrived. Was it useful in Canaan when they encountered the giants?
It's what they used mostly. What the girth of it was for was the layering of this magically imbued box.
Okay.
That they had imbued with great power, and this great power then became what you call the mercy seat.
Right. Now, what happened in Canaan? I guess the Israelites got it. I can't remember. Is that David with the Goliath? I don't know in the transition period.
Everybody hung out together, and then we got to be 6 feet tall instead of 9 and 4.
Is that true? Did they mingle?
Well, you'd have to check with your total biology to see if it works, if it's compatible with the DNA strand.
Uh-huh. Okay, but I don't know the story. They end up in Canaan, they stay there, and Israel starts, right, Carol? Isn't that what happens?
That is where Israel is.
Okay. So you see, what's really great, Carolyn, about us not getting the details of the Bible, the people who, the atheists will listen to this, they say, great, these guys aren't whacked out Christian fundamentals, they don't even know the Bible. And the Christians will...
Who quotes Armstrong.
Yeah, who quotes Armstrong. As a smattering of key, ridiculous. Total fitting and ease. Bob's a walking pun and a walking omission, but sounds like he knows everything. But anyways, so we appeal to the atheists because we're not up on this stuff, but we know enough to the Christians say, well, they know a bit about the Bible, quoting Armstrong, and they're not totally flakes. They have a bit of Christianity in them.
What's amazing, what's more amazing for us, fine, what's more amazing for us is that most of what you call Judeo-Christians don't understand the Bible either.
Yeah, at least I'm thinking about it.
But no, wait, they had no clue. They had no clue.
Yeah, what you're revealing about the meaning of Moses, they don't know.
Which is the very basis that Ion is even discussing.
What's that mean? Which is the very basis?
The very basis of this Christianity that everybody's pushing against. It's right on. It's just all the other stuff that they've added to make it a demigod any different than the one that Aaron created Baal for them to worship. You've got to be a pope in a palace, and you got to pray to the pope in order to receive salvation or have absolution for your sins or problems. How does that work? How is that different than Egypt? How is that different than Pharaoh? How is that different than a taskmaster that holds you in bondage and slavery to serve their God their way?
Yes, and serving Wall Street.
And the only reason that you need an exodus is when the oppression becomes to such a state because of all those who've gone on before that makes that exodus a reality. And sometimes that's imbued with things that have power because they're imbued with power. And the recollection or the collection or the reassembling of those things breaks those chains but does not discount all those that have gone on before.
Yes, the...
It does not get any better than that.
That's right. In the present collapse of the latest temple of Wall Street,
and we walk out of Wall Street, captains of industry, the ones that survived the plague of Wall Street, and we establish a new Wall Street, a new non-false premises.
We can take the old bonds and the old stock certificates and weave them into mats, and they'll have function again. We just like when your Twin Towers fail and bearer bonds floating all over everywhere.
Right, right. And so the, so J.W. was on a, he's 43, started acquiring a lot when he was 40. So J.W. did a 40-year thing. We did a 40-year thing. The 40-year gang has come together and we're moving forward. Exodus that we're putting on.
We're hosting
the Exodus. That's right. Well, we don't have to go anywhere. They come to us. They start the Exodus.
The Exodus. No.
They come to us. It's their Exodus to us that we're inaugurating.
No. The Exodus is only them realizing that Canaan is only 3 days away. The promised land, the kingdom that they're trying to usher in is not 40 years away, it's only 3 days away.
That's why Carolyn said 2 hours ago that we'd have the Grand Wallet in 3 days.
Bam! And you're there. You've already got it. It's already there. It's already a promise. You just don't want to have to wait a couple thousand years for enough more to croak, to bring and usher into that deliciousness that is heaven on earth as earth is in heaven.
Right, so whatever we want, we 3, 2, 1 it, it's arrived, but we then acknowledge the 1, 2, 3 up to 3 days. We only allow the 1, 2, 3 process as a subset of the 3, 2, 1 for 3 days. And then we have a new wanting, 3 days.
And those can wake up, and those that don't want to have any, or aren't going to have it, they're not going to have it, and that's okay.
Right.
That's not a problem, because see, you are the center of your universe. Moses was the center of his universe, and we're still talking about him.
So why does J.W. always has been saying for a year or two, it's all about Carolyn? What is it about?
Because her the way that she can agape love and not have resistance have resistance regarding no other person except for that one. She doesn't have resistance. She takes it as is, and she's not ethereal about it. She doesn't have to beat it to death. She doesn't have to do any of that. She just takes it, and she draws the best of it that is and draws it to her. And she's grounded enough that she doesn't get airy-fairy so far out there that she loses track and misunderstands the pronouns.
Right. I'm a bit of a victim of that. Or not a victim.
Yeah, it's not a, if you want to be, you can, but you don't have to.
I'm a little,
one.
I'm not as good at it as Carolyn.
You are better at it than Carolyn because you can draw more out of non-physical than it's ever been.
That's right.
Taking the leading edge, you've just now single-handedly most eliminated the leading edge. You've eliminated them because now where the leading edge was, ain't the leading edge anymore. That's old school.
Yeah, I'm the leading edge of the leading edge. That we did that last week.
Correct. Now, Carolyn's not that, but Carolyn is the grounded part that'll make sure everybody that isn't the leading edge feels like they are and brings them along and helps them through the hard parts and listens to them quietly, and it makes them feel good and it loves them the way they are. And convinces them that they are perfectly happy where they are and are now ready for more, and enlightens them into the place because it's real.
That's right.
Whereas you would be, you wouldn't care if they hit it or not.
Even though I got more compassion than Carolyn.
Time will tell, but yes.
but the point is, she's the grounder. That's right. She's the grounder.
And can take our words and convey them so purely that it's easily understood. And the reason that there's an issue, ever there's an issue, and this is for your notation, by the way, the only reason there's ever an issue with the compiling of words that have a conveyance of a thought process that you created is the simple fact or the simple reality that her knowing because you're already dead. So he wants it to be so that the most people can get the most good out of this expression that is now becoming their reality, if it's their wanting. And you have to convey it in such a way, just like Moses, you have to convey it in such a way that you don't have to go to all the trouble to get the new Ten Commandments and then have to come in off of Mount Sinai and bust them.